Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 18th of March. Coming up shortly, we're just trying to track down our guest for this hour, the author of The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. Thomas Larson will be joining us shortly. He's a journalist. He's been a staff writer for the San Diego Reader for 15 years, teaches in the MFA program in creative nonfiction at Ashland University in Ohio. He suffered 3 heart attacks in 5 years, the first in 2006. And the book looks at his encounters with the medical community, his look finally at his diet and his obesity, his genetic history, his father and his brother dying very early of heart disease, and the relationship with his longtime partner, Susanna, who helped him confront his weight, his diet, and his illness. It's a very moving account, and he will be with us shortly to talk about all that is involved. There are, of course, a number of people who experience heart attacks each year, and he went to a vegan diet eventually, which he believes has just made his heart ever so much stronger. He had been classified as obese, but he lost over 30 pounds as a result of this diet. He also talks about exercise, and I must tell you, as I was reading his book last night, while I was also listening to Irish poetry and listening to Irish music at about 9:20, I said, that's it. I'm going on the treadmill, which I wasn't going to do yesterday, but he convinced me that it was a very good idea. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I know that obviously this is a disease that strikes so many people, men and women, and we are going to welcome your phone calls for Thomas. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, so you can reach us there as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Those are all ways for you to be able to reach our conversation with Thomas Larson. So that's coming up momentarily. We do want to tell you that tomorrow at this time we'll be speaking with 2 women, one white and one black, about white privilege. Debbie Irving is a Boston-based racial justice educator and author of the book Waking Up White. Joining her will be poet, healer, and teacher Norma Johnson, and they're going to be speakers at an interesting conference, the 15th Annual White Privilege Conference that's going to be held in Madison, and that's taking place next week, so that's tomorrow. And Thomas is with us now, Thomas Larson, and phone calls are already coming in. Thomas, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, thank Thomas. Yeah, our great pleasure. I must tell you that I had a heart attack as well 6 years ago, so reading your book was somewhat difficult for me, I must admit. But you describe the sensation of what happened so accurately. I've kind of shied away from it, but I really appreciate the depth of this writing because it just takes in so much, doesn't it? Your relationships and what life is and who you are and your family, and it's just, it's all there. Let me start, though, with how you are now, because it sounds like you just made this radical change in your diet and you're feeling like a pretty healthy guy now.
Yes, I'm very well. I've been battling a head cold and a little bronchitis, but nothing is heart related. And 3 years a vegan has really made a difference in my life. My only regret is that I didn't become one many, many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about many years ago, because you do write about your father and your brother, who both died very young of heart disease. Why is it that you didn't see it then with them?
Well, that's the great question I explore in the book. The power of denial of a hereditary illness is the most formidable thing I've ever experienced in my life. And of course, as Kierkegaard says, we only understand this looking back, not as it happens.
Yes.
I knew my my brother and my father died of heart attacks, but for some reason I didn't think it would happen to me because I live in California, I was a vegetarian. I had pretty good control of my weight where they were both obese and had continued a very sort of bad dairy-rich diet all of their lives. As a matter of fact, we lived in Wisconsin for part of my growing up. So the power of this illness to sneak up on you is, I think, what's so shocking. It does and it doesn't come out of nowhere. I had symptoms in the first in the month before I had the first heart attack, but I just thought I was out of shape. I just thought I was stressed. I was working too hard, and I just vowed to cut back. And then, in the midst of teaching a class, I was hit with the proverbial elephantine chest pain, and it just doubled me over. I was lucky to drive 1 mile to a hospital and have my life saved.
I can't believe you got in the car and drove to the hospital. Oh, my gosh. You would think one of the students would say, sorry, Professor Larson, you're not going anywhere. We'll just call the ambulance.
Well, I didn't know what was happening to me. I just thought I was sick. I actually, you know, just a bad illness, a bad cold or something. I thought I would drive home to get my partner, Susanna, and we'd figure out what to do. But the moment I got in that car, I knew I had to get there. There is something compelling in the unconscious that pushes us.
Yeah, and there's something compelling about the sensation of a heart attack. It's unlike anything you've ever experienced.
As you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had stents put in the first go around, and yet you've had 3 heart attacks, and it took a while for you to completely change your life. Was that just denial again, Thomas, or was there something else at work?
Well, here's the great paradox of heart attacks is that when they fix you with angioplasty, which my first one was March of 2006, my arteries were 99% and 100% blocked. Mm. And, of course, that's what brought on the angina and would have brought on my death. But these stents, I had 3 put in, and they are like culverts in a rainstorm, which pull the fluid, in my case, the blood, through and oxygenate the body in a way it wasn't happening before. So I suddenly felt incredibly alive, you know, sort of fixed by cardiology. And you know, for the days and weeks after that, the denial built up again because, in a sense, I was feeling so good. Mm-hmm. Of course, I started to exercise more. I began getting in touch more with Susanna. But you know, the mortality, which is really the thing that comes in to change your life, which I'll talk about in a minute, that was, you know, I was able to push that back and keep that at bay. And so I enjoyed a couple years of heart health, but stalking me within my arteries was both the dietary and the genetic turn toward cardiovascular illness. Those things had built up in me over decades, and they weren't about to spare me another heart attack. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, 2.5 years later, I had a second. 2.5 years after that, I had a third. And that's when I really woke up to the power of the illness.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that you were well served early on by the medical community?
In every case, because they do, in most every case, because they do save your life and they do monitor you and you're on statin drugs. And of course, they have their admonitions about stress and doing, you know, exercising, get off the couch and so on. But the nutritional information was really lacking. As the one doctor I consulted, Caldwell Esselstyn, who's written a great book called Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, told me that he said, you didn't have a nutritional quarterback to help you. And that, in my case, this is not true in everyone's case, but in my case, what that meant was I really needed to remove all cholesterol from my diet, all animal protein, and become a vegan. But I was slow to warm to that idea. After all, food is one of our greatest pleasures. Yes. Even as a vegetarian, it's very hard to change that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what former President Clinton is on, isn't he? A
yes.
Vegan as well.
He is a vegan. He did the, you know, his case really mirrors mine in the sense that he lost a good 35, 40 pounds. He started exercising more. I don't know how he found a way to be less stressed, but I eventually have, in part because I'm a writer and I can sort of show up at the desk and control my deadlines on my own. A lot of people don't have that particular privilege, but I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that you didn't have perhaps a medical nutritionist or somebody who really understood all of that, but you did have your very loving and longtime partner, Susanna, and it seemed to me as though Susanna had a pretty good idea of what you ought to be eating.
Oh, absolutely. More than just a diet change, but the core element of my story is how she made and helped me make the illness relational. And this is just really, really key to those of us who are as lucky as I am to have a partner of 25 years who both cares for me and wants, you know, the best for me. So in a sense, she was thrust into this new role where she became the bearer of the bad news, which was basically, if I really want to heal from this, I've got to make these changes. I made some, but I really didn't make enough. And it was her constant giving to me, her insistence, really, that I become more connected with her to my disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really made the difference for me. Because when you're this close to someone and you have a heart condition, it happens not just to one heart, but to both of yours.
Yeah. So tell me more about that connection. How did she help you?
Well, through the insistence not only on diet, but through relationship, through therapy for us to talk about this. I mean, she would call me on my patterns of denial, my sense that I was so devoted to my work and my writing that would catch up to me, that I wasn't reducing my stress. She could feel it in me. And she insisted on creating greater intimacy through dialogue, we went to a Jungian analyst eventually, and that was really that gave some breakthrough for me, because I was able to feel as bad as I felt. This is the irony of heart disease, is that it's part of the sanctuary where we end up, that in the sanctuary of being cared for, we feel we don't have to do as much on our own. But I really needed, with her presence, really, to articulate what it was I was afraid of, what it was I wasn't facing, the fact that I didn't have all the answers. After all, I'm a man, and we're notorious for not facing our fears and insecurity and dealing with this thing in silence. So the idea that a couple becomes more intimate and talks more and shares more of their fear through intimate conversation was really something, I think, primarily, I should say, what saved me and got me to change.
Mm. And was the ultimate fear the mortality?
Yeah, I think it's of course it's the not knowing how this disease is stalking you, And the ultimate fear is that you'll die in public, that you will be unfinished with your life, in this way that will also bring on the burden for those you leave behind. I don't know, you enter a new identity when you have a disease or an illness as strong as heart disease, and it clicks on, the wave sloshes over you and begins to drown you. And this new identity tells you that you have to dwell where the shadow is. And the shadow is your mortality and the loss of those you love and those who love you losing you. That, I think, is the greatest.
And yet you also can't take that on too heavily, or you can't move.
Yeah. I mean, when people read my book, it's remarkable their emotional response. That's what I wanted them to have. But they do tell me that it's tough, because it's as a man told me the other day, he said, I read your book and I was scared to death. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to scare people to death, but it's sort of the book I wished I could have read when I was, you know, sort of in the deep patient place of the illness, where it was at bay and I was content with that. I think we need to both be in the illness and be alive after the illness, and not let it, as you say, overtake our consciousness. But that involves being conscious of what we have. So there's no more unconsciousness with disease. That really has to go. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that gets us to middle age, but it doesn't get us through our later years.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Thomas Larson, and his book is The Sanctuary of Illness. It's about his living very well now, thank you, with heart disease. He did have 3 heart attacks in 5 years, and the book is a very moving and deep examination of the experience of heart attack, and then a repeat, and then another repeat. It's also looking at an examination of his father and his brother, and a very moving portrayal of his longtime partner, Susanna, and the depth of their relationship that got him really to examine pretty fully his life and his mortality, and to change his life substantially so that he's probably healthier now than he has been in years and years and years. Here's our phone number. Obviously, many people deal with heart disease, and you may have it in your family. You may have experienced heart disease, and you have questions or comments for our guests. So here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. The book is The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. Thomas is a journalist, a critic, and a memoirist. He's been a staff writer for the San Diego Reader for a number of years. His books include The Memoir and The Memoirist and The Saddest Music Ever Written, The Story of Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. He teaches in the MFA program in creative nonfiction at Ashland University in Ohio. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thomas Larson is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we start our calls, Thomas, with Frank in Chicago. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
To you too, Frank.
Good afternoon, yeah.
Hi. Well, my question is I'd like to know what you eat every day for, like, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Okay. I wondered about that too. What do you eat, Thomas?
Well, I have a very boring and simple diet, and it is all plant-based. I eat fruits and vegetables, legumes, lots of greens, especially cooked collards and mustard and kale, and some whole wheat breads and whole wheat pasta. So this morning I had a kind of a cereal with fruit. For lunch, I'll probably have rice and beans. For dinner, I'll have some sort of greens. That sustains me. The funny thing about my diet is that I eat as much as I want. I don't diet in the sense of the verb to lose weight. I've already lost a lot of weight by being a plant-based eater. I'm never really hungry unless I forget to eat or I'm away from the food bin.
And what about exercise, Thomas?
Exercise is a good 45 minutes of walking, 5 days a week.
Mm.
Yeah, getting out. I have a treadmill at home, but I'm on the road a lot, so Suzanne and I will go out walking, regularly, religiously. It's mm-hmm. a lot of fun to do.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank, for the call. Tim is next in Madison. Hi, Tim.
A wonderful story in my family of exactly the wonderful success you can have. My father-in-law had a high-stress job and had a rotten diet and lifestyle and the like and wound up having a heart attack in his 50s, but he didn't pay any attention to it, and then he wound up having another one around 60, and his cardiologist basically laid down the law and says, I hope you've enjoyed your life so far because you're never going to see retirement. And indeed, he did very much like your guest did. He went to the larder and he threw out everything and started eating fresh fruits and vegetables and started exercising, and he had a long, healthy retirement and lasted until he was 80 years old.
Oh, great. I love this story.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, Thomas. It's a good one.
And they are not uncommon either. That one of the things I think it's important to say about diet here is that people who have heart disease often have livers that produce an inordinate amount of cholesterol. So any meat, dairy, high-fat products, especially processed foods and sugars, only adds to what the body already produces. So once I removed all that cholesterol, which, by the way, in my case was measured LDL over 250, I brought the LDL down to 106.
Woo!
There's lots and lots of science to say that is a main ingredient in lasting and in enduring, because my body is just, it just keeps producing that, that 106, what are they, milliliters, I'm not sure, of cholesterol. And, just don't add any more to your diet. That is especially true for heart patients. It's not true for everyone.
Yeah. What did the doctors say about you now, Thomas?
Well, I regularly pass my echocardiograms. I'm still on the same sort of lifetime medications, which feature cholesterol-inhibiting drugs like a statin drug and others. I do my 6 month and annual checkups are fine. As a matter of fact, I mentioned earlier that I have this kind of bronchitis and head cold I've had for a couple weeks. But I went to the doctor for it because I'm traveling and speaking, and the doctor said, your vitals are excellent. And he paused and he said, it's probably your diet. Your diet helps you maintain an even blood pressure, a low heart pulse, the immune system is strong in me, and so on. I check out really well with the docs.
Good. Thank you very much, Tim, for the call. Here's an email from Nick. My grandfather died at the age of 60 from a heart attack. My father passed away 2 years ago after several heart attacks and a quad bypass. My brother is in terrible physical shape, very overweight and not exercising. He's in his 30s and thinks he doesn't need to worry about it. I've been trying to get him to go vegan, but he loves cooking and he won't give up meat yet. This person says, what can I say to him that will make him come to his heart-healthy senses? Many thanks.
Well, I think it's hard to tell somebody who's convinced they don't need to change. I think the best thing you can do is through persistent seriousness of tone, keep talking to people. This is what, after all, I was kind of there with my partner, Susanna, and it was her persistence and her seriousness about this. She wouldn't let it go. There wasn't anything hectoring or abusive about it at all. It was just this sense that because she cared so much about my health, I eventually started to care as much as she did. And I think just if you have a brother who can remind you of that, again, not in a punitive way, perhaps try different meal choices together. Go out to a vegan or a vegetarian restaurant together. Be a model yourself of good eating, because after all, it sounds like the heart illness is in the family and it's genetic. And somehow get your brother to get to the doctor. Sometimes the doctors can really scare you straight.
Diana in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi.
Hello?
Hi, Diana. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I'm driving. I'm sorry. It's probably going to be a little muffled here. But, yeah, my question is, this guy is awesome. I'm just so impressed right now. But my concern is I had two stents put in about a year and a half ago, and about 2 weeks ago I was having chest pains, went into the hospital, and they did the balloon thing, whatever it's called.
Angioplasty.
I'm diabetic on top of it. I'm overweight, and and my doctor's telling me right now, my cardiologist is saying right now that I can't exercise until I do the stress test thing or whatever. So I'm just trying to find some direction.
Thomas.
What is your diet? What kinds of foods are you eating?
I'm sorry, what was that, sir?
I said, what kinds of foods are you eating?
Well, I'm eating, I don't eat any fast foods or nothing like that, but I eat hamburger, I eat chicken, I eat beef. I eat pretty much everything that I want. I haven't cut out I've cut out the carbohydrates. I'm kind of getting a little bit of a grasp on the carbohydrates, but I'm still eating the high fats and stuff of that nature.
Well, the thing I would recommend is to stop eating all fats and try just for a week and see how you feel. Try eating a plant-based diet. Just force yourself to drink smoothies or carbohydrates is not our problem. Those of us who have heart disease, it is if you eat too many processed foods and they're simple carbohydrates, but that's not the problem. The problem is the fat and the meat and the dairy intake. And I'm sorry to say this on Wisconsin Public Radio, but for people with heart disease, this is a real problem. The weight needs to come down, and it will. I can't tell you how many people I've heard from and know who have lost 10, 20, 30 pounds in a matter of months when they stopped eating animal product and animal fat. There's something about our bodies, your body and my body, that both loves the taste but is ruined by the added cholesterol. We are producing plenty of it on our own. You will not starve. As a matter of fact, your stomach will shrink on a plant-based diet, and you'll strangely feel more full because the taste factor is not there. But can you try it for just a week?
Yeah, I'm willing to try. I'm at this point in my life, I'm willing to try anything. I know I told my daughter, I said, you know, right now, I said, all I want to do is I want to live. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I want to live. And I don't want to die. And I don't want to end up, you know, in a hospital, somewhere where somebody has to take care of me the rest of my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and importantly, your daughter wants you to live.
Right.
You want to live, but she wants you to live.
Right.
She wants you to live in this in the way that health is relational for the two of you. It's co-productive for you. That you and her are in it together. Connect with your daughter. She knows what you should do. She can feel it in you. And I just think the diet is about the only thing we can do if we have excess weight and we have bad habits and we're at a point where we can't exercise. Diet is about all that's left. There is not a magic pill for that. Diet is key.
Yeah. Thank you, Diana, very much for the call. You could hear the urgency in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know,
mm-hmm.
I want to, it's like, it's a wonderful life is what I was hearing Jimmy Stewart. I want to live. Does it sometimes, for whatever strange reason, and if so, what is that, does it take all that she's been through, all that you've been through, to really muster up everything in you and say, I really want to live. I got to change.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And what my book does is in about 55 very short chapters, a page or two long, I really expand, kind of explode those moments in which, whatever my emotion is, whether it's denial or fear or joy or worry or confusion, I try to impress upon myself and occupy the intensity of that moment. And there's a chapter in there in which I realize that I have to feel this loss of myself, or I have to feel my partner's loss of me. I have to feel as bad as I feel. I have to feel that I'm up against the wall and I have to change.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just make this as an intellectual decision. You have to literally let the body be as frightened as it is, and the body will respond with it will cooperate with you when you start to feel and you go down deep into your soul, your gut, wherever that place that the blood lubricates the emotion, and you'll find it down there. I mean, I and lots of people have found it. We went cold turkey on the fat-based diet, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a way out, but you got to go down first.
Yeah. Ruth in Madison. Hi.
Hi. So about 30 years ago, I got a diagnosis that made me cry for about a week. I'm going to be intentionally vague about it, but it's basically something that will, when it's in remission, I'm fine. When it's not in remission, I'm in constant and unrelenting pain for weeks. And so stress is one of those things that will exacerbate and make it come out of remission. And so I'm highly motivated not to be stressed. And so usually when I find myself in a situation where I recognize I'm stressed, I ask myself, is this worth coming out of remission over? And the answer is almost always no. And so then if I can't change the situation, I just have to change how I feel about it. Take a giant step back and say, this really isn't my problem. This really isn't something that, or something like that. Or this won't matter in a week, you know, or something like that. And one of the ways that I allow my body to signal me that I am becoming stressed is that I, on a two-week vacation, I stopped using antiperspirant, not deodorant, antiperspirant, because when you start sweating under the arms, you will start doing that when you're stressed. It can be heat. It can be emotional. And so if I notice that I'm starting to get wet under the arms, then it's like, wait a minute, what's happening now? Am I too hot? Because that is a form of stress. Deal with it, okay? Or am I getting emotional about this? Okay, giant step back. You know, and so I've stopped inhibiting my body from telling me when I'm stressed, and I've stopped accepting stress that I don't have to accept. And, I mean, people can ask, you know, they can ask themselves, do I want that Snickers bar or do I want my left foot? Or do I want, you know, that high-sugar latte coffee, or do I want the eyesight in my left eye?
Yeah. The role of stress, I think that it's really crucial to a healthy body, and it really plays a role in heart disease.
Yeah. Yeah, that was beautifully expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And some people call that cognitive therapy. In other words, the using the mind and using mindfulness to do this process of stepping back and quantifying what it is that one is feeling. My only suggestion with that is it sounds like she's able to go move from the feeling into the intellect on a perfect bridge. There's no traffic in between. But I think a lot of us, as I was saying before, first have to feel what we're feeling. And of course, the body will present us with the sweaty palm or the headache or the thing that comes out of nowhere that we think, oh my, what is this? What is this new body pain I need to worry about? But yeah, it's mind and body connection that can work for people. And bravo to the caller for being able to quantify it in such a brilliantly sort of self-therapeutic way. I'm very impressed by her words. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ruth, so much for your call. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is Thomas Larson. His book is The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. He is a journalist. The book is about a very personal, very moving account of his experiencing 3 heart attacks in a 5-year period of time and his encounters with his wonderful partner of 25 years, Susanna, who helped him change his life in terms of his eating and exercise habits, his encounters with the medical community, and certainly his encounters with his own mortality. And we're welcoming phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Thomas Larson, author of The Sanctuary of Illness, a memoir of heart disease. Dr. John in Lac des Flambeaux, hi.
Yes, a comment for your guest. He probably did not have a cardiac perfusion test, and that would have measured his blood flow all over the body. And the cardiac surgeon that worked on me when I had a massive heart attack, I asked about stent, and he said, waste of time. They're just little coil springs that clog, and in a year or two, you'll be back in, and you'll get another one, and another year or two, you'll be back in again. Get the bypass surgery. Don't bother with the stents at all. And I'm just putting that out to your guest, because mm-hmm. he may have a better quality of life, but stents do nothing for longevity.
That is true. That is true. They are temporary fixes, and thus the need to change other elements in our lives that will contribute to health, such as diet, exercise, and less stress. And I'm aware of that stents are one way to go, and the bypass is in many cases a preferred way to go. Certainly that's what Bill Clinton had, and new arteries are as they're adapted and stitched onto the heart are better than old ones that are repaired with stents. I agree. That's sort of my great unknown, and I think a lot of us. I've met people who have 20 and 25 stents.
Oh my goodness! Really?
It does seem excessive. All diseases, I think, have over-treatments, overemphasis on things that work for a majority population and may not work for individuals per se. And this is news to me about the cardiac perfusion test. I think that would have been interesting to have.
Yes, thank you for the call, John. Let's go to Bob in Stevens Point. Hi. Bob, hi.
Hello?
Yes, Bob, go ahead, sir.
I can hardly hear you.
I don't know why. We can hear you, Bob. Just talk.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just wondering if your guest could comment on how diabetes will sometimes cover up symptoms of a heart attack. I had a heart attack 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my.
And when I finally got to the hospital the following day, some enzymes were way up there, and they said, oh, yes, you definitely had a heart attack. But the night before, I just thought I had indigestion. Took a Prilosec, and nothing happened.
Yeah.
And I went to bed. I woke up. Everything was fine the next morning. So I'm just curious. They made comments due to the fact that I have diabetes, that diabetes will sometimes cover up the symptoms of a heart attack, and you don't even know it. I had one.
Thomas, you want to respond?
Yeah, I do. This is the problem with heartburn, that indigestion can often mask a heart attack. And there's a few different, I'll just be quick about this, there's a few different ways to know the difference between the two. And the most important one is the sweating. And that it, often people will go to bed with this feeling of indigestion. And if they wake up, there are cases when people do not, you know, they have a heart attack while they're sleeping, and they do not, you know, they do die. But if you wake up and you're confused, you're dizzy, you're hot, and you're sweating, get to the hospital. Call 911 right away. I talk about these things as prescriptive devices in my book. But again, diet will help you not have indigestion. I rarely ever have the kind of indigestion I had when I had a dairy-rich diet. So that way, you know, without indigestion, if I do really have angina, then I'll know it.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob, for the call. Here's an email that's come in from Donna. It's on Facebook. It's hard at first to cut down, but you will find rather quickly that your body adjusts and you don't crave the foods that are not good for you nearly as much. Also, sugar and meat seem to reinforce cravings for each other, so cutting down on both at the same time may help reinforce your efforts. You agree with that? Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Jane in Appleton. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I really was glad to hear about the contributions that your significant other made to your recovery. I have a significant other with an extremely strong family history of heart problems. He exercises. He tries his best to maintain a good diet. I personally eat lots and lots of vegetables, fruits, and really very few lean meats. My husband has other digestive issues. I would hesitate to say he has colitis, but foods that typically would be found in a vegan or vegetarian diet really cause him digestive problems. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about what would be the best way to help me help him tailor his diet without causing these other issues to flare up.
Wow, you know, I think we really need a nutritionist
right.
to examine that because in almost all cases that I hear about, know about, read about with a vegan diet, you're right. For you and for me, the body welcomes it. As I say, my vitals are very sharp and they maintain their integrity because of this vegan diet. When before I would have higher blood pressure, I would have greater cholesterol problems. I'm going to have to defer to a nutritionist, and I would just shop around and see what you can find with that. But it sounds like you're in communication and you are you're an example yourself to the possibility of a dietary change. But I'm not sure. I'm not real clear about what to recommend.
Well, you mentioned a nutritionist. If you don't have somebody like Susanna in your life, if you don't have a partner, if you're by yourself or whatever, and you're experiencing some of these very major issues, where do you recommend that you go? Where can you get the medical advice and the emotional support that you need to carry you through?
Well, start with a film called Forks Over Knives. And this will introduce you to the whole world of what we call food as medicine. And the film takes a very deep and persisting look at what foods we can eat that will benefit and what foods we eat that do not benefit our health. And it is a powerful portrait through the actual experience of several different heart cardiovascular sufferers, those who have diabetes or weight problems or who have genetically high cholesterol and blockage. And you'll see in there people, you know, cooking and shopping and finding sources in communities and so on, and it'll really open up that world for you. The other thing is I would just Google vegan vegetarianism in your community. There are already groups, meetup groups of vegans. One of the things that really helped Susanna and me was a vegan cooking class. That's a great place to start, and you'll find them in every community. Where you go in and you learn, well, how do I cook with less oil? How do I cook with tofu? How do I make things like ice cream and pudding and different kinds of dishes that do have high taste? Because, you know, this is really herbal-based cooking where taste is central to the foods. So a really good vegan cooking class is a great way. Then you start to meet people and you find communities of people who are on this diet or are making changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for the call. One more call. We're almost out of time. Ellie in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Ellie.
Thanks for taking my call. Thomas partially answered my question, but I have a husband who has lived with heart disease for the last 20 years, including, you know, stents and the whole statins and all that. But he will not give up. He will not give up his dairy or his meat diet. And I intuitively knew that this is a problem for him, and this program is affirming that. But what approach could I use to get him to even begin to think about changing?
Hmm. Susie, what did Susanna do, Thomas?
Well, I'm using that same word again, the persistence of it. I think, you know, as I look back and I remember what she did was she emphasized the positive in this, and she ate the diet herself. I mean, we both went on this. She didn't need to. She still eats a little bit of salmon every now and again, but you know, she and I involved ourselves eventually in this kind of cooking and eating partnership. We ate consciously together. I know what's in my food. We go to the store and we read the labels together.
Mm-hmm.
We ask in restaurants what's in the food they're cooking. We insist on being around people who eat in this healthy way. So there's lots of indirect approaches, I think, rather than this kind of like you keep pounding on the door of his illness and saying, "Let me in." There's a lot of ways to. I mean, after all, here's another thing to remember.
We only have 10 seconds.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, you're on the right path because you care and you're the one who is concerned in your family.
Good. Thank you. Thanks, Ellie. Thomas, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thomas Larson, the book is The Sanctuary of Illness, A Memoir of Heart Disease. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to K.P. Whaley for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for all of your calls and email messages, everybody. It's great to hear from you always. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening.